The Larry Hardesty Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Second hour, riding with you till 2:30, when we begin our Rangers Capital coverage from the Garden on 98.7 ESPN. Another 13 minutes or so talking Knicks, and then we'll turn our attention to the Yankees. Tough loss yesterday, and Pat Ragazzo from L.A. will join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk the streaking Mets and what's going on with Francisco Alvarez. Just when you think everything is rolling, we're good, Mets are hot, another injury. It's unbelievable. Now I know what Yankee fans go through. It's injuries. Every time we turn around, it's injuries. But let's continue to talk next. 1-800-919-3776. John's in Jersey. John, you're next on 98.7.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man. What's up?
So I told your screener Knicks in six.
Mm-hmm.
I would have told him Knicks in five if we could get some type of points from our center position. But since we can't, I take Knicks in six. So the Knicks coach, he needs to mix up the zone. See all that trouble Miami gave Philly last week with that zone. We need to switch up and play a little bit more zone and exploit. They can't really shoot. They don't have good perimeter shooting, but our man-to-man defense is not that good. Oubre can be had, so can Tobias Harris. Embiid is not 100%. We can beat this club 4-2. I'm going to give Philly two games because anytime a team goes home, they get the extra energy. So mm-hmm. I'm going to give them two games. But the Knicks is a better ball club. And my last comment is that I was listening to the previous callers. Mm-hmm. Just because you're not getting the production out of your starters that you were getting during the regular season, you got 12 men on the basketball team, and that's why it's a team sport. You saw we got 23 points from our bench yesterday to get the W, and that's what you need. When the starters are not playing well, that's when you bring your bench in. That's why it's a 12-man team. You know, and that's my last comment. You know, like I said, Knicks in six, and I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you, man.
All right, thanks for the phone call. Look, first of all, you have 12, but 12 aren't playing. It's the postseason. Everybody shortens their roster, so you're looking at your top 8 or 9, maybe, that's going to give you production. Listen, the bench was outstanding yesterday, and the bench was the difference in this game, okay? The Knicks bench, 14 of 29, 48%, 8 of 13 from 3, 61%. 6 of 8 from the free throw line, 22 rebounds, 8 offensive, 6 assists, and 1 turnover. I mean, it was unbelievable. That was the difference. And I do think the Knicks' man-on-man defense is very good. It's very good. But I will say that sometimes they will move and use different things. You're trying to help. If somebody gets hot, you're trying to help on Tyrese Maxey, maybe take the ball out of his hands. And so now you're doubling, and now that puts your rotation sometimes in, you know, if you're not communicating, it puts your rotation at a disadvantage. So once again, these are the things that they are working on probably right now as we speak, as the media is waiting to talk to them up in Tarrytown in Westchester to see, I remember those days, to see what adjustments you're going to have and whatnot, talking to them after practice. And after film sessions and stuff like that. But, you know, once again, every game is its own series. And so for tomorrow, there'll be things that will be different. I mean, there were things different from the first half to the second half in the game. And rightfully so. You have to make adjustments. You can't allow a team to do the same thing and just get you all the time. And once again, on that pick and roll where the player goes, the defender tries to, it gets cut off from Embiid, and Maxey goes to the basket, and now the person that's dropping off Embiid is either Hartenstein or Mitchell Robinson trying to stop him, trying to stop Maxey. It's hard. They got to find a different way to do that, and I'm sure they will come up with something. Ricardo's in Jersey. Ricardo, you are next on 98.7.
Larry, my man, I first thing I got to say, man, every time I listen to you, you always got the slamming tracks on. I'm a DJ myself, and I always, always love the music you're playing. It's so vibey, and it leads right into perfect sports talk. So
now, Ricardo,
I love listening to you, man.
Ricardo, I appreciate it, but I can't take the credit, man. That's my crew. That's Harvey. That's that's Joe Leo. That's, you know, Julian. That's Chantel. That's a bunch of folks during the week. They are on point. So I'm glad you showed them some love.
Definitely, definitely. Listen, I sit here. I'm actually driving on to an event right now, and I'm sitting here listening to a lot of the callers, again, pulling back on how many games the Knicks can win in this series. And listen, Brunson was a little bit bad. Not a little bit bad. He was pretty bad last night. It's supporting cast. I mean, the 76ers really slept on the guys that we really look on to, like Deuce. Hart, nobody really slept on, but everyone played really tight on our guys that really do produce. But the problem is for the 76ers, and I've said this since everyone likes to say, oh, the 76ers are going to beat the Knicks. You're going to know they're not because of Joel Embiid. He's at a leash right now, especially with the stupid move he did yesterday. At least at a 65, maybe even 70%, you know, health situation. 76ers need Embiid to be at 100% to beat the Knicks. I really think here's the deal. Brunson can't play like the way he played yesterday. Brunson played the seasonal Brunson that we've had all season. With the supporting cast, I have a feeling, and I feel that the Knicks can sweep the 76ers. They can go five games if Brunson has a bad series. But again, Brunson got to step his game up. Game two tomorrow, he's going to have to look at tape, see what the deal is, and take full control. And if he does, I think the Knicks will sweep. Because Embiid, look at the way he was playing yesterday. When he came back, he was behind the court. He was barely even on the other side. Mm-hmm. But he still put up 29 points, which is also scary as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I really think the Knicks can sweep. I think the Knicks can sweep. If not, game five.
All right, Ricardo. Thanks for the kind words for my crew. And keep listening. Look, Embiid was phenomenal in the first half. He was unstoppable in the first half. He's hitting the three. He was going to the basket a little bit. Now, he got it caught up in the emotion and tried to dunk. And, you know, it's crazy. Did you hear the stat that he has dunked only 19 times this year because of that knee? Which means he has no confidence that the knee is and why would you? He knows it. Listen, you can, as an athlete, as a person, when something hurts, you favor it. You know what you can do and what you can't do. And he knows. And so, if he's hitting the three, he's going to be a problem. If his knee is bothering him and he can't get the length, the rise to get to the three, and he hits it short as he did a lot in the second half last night, it's going to be a problem for Philly. They're going to have to find other scoring. They're going to need somebody else. Maybe it's Oubre. But see, the thing with Oubre is you're going to ask him to score and do a defensive job on Brunson. The way Brunson moves around, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. John's in Morristown. What's up, John?
Hey, Larry, man. Always great to hear your voice, man. You do a great job. And it's just it's like talking to a buddy. So I love hearing you.
I appreciate that, John.
You got it, pal. Hey, listen, really, to me, the most important thing that won this game last night was rebounding, right? It's a clinic on what to teach kids about basketball. If you rebound and play defense, you get second chance opportunities, and you score. Because we didn't shoot well at all last night, but we had that many more opportunities to make up for it. And that's what it's all about.
You're right, John. Thanks for the kind words, my friend. That's the bottom line. It gives you more opportunities. It gives you more opportunities and give your opponent less opportunities. All right, it's plain and simple. Simple math. And so that's what the Knicks have been able to do this year. And they've been able to find the right person. I think the one thing that folks have mentioned during this time that we've chatted about the Knicks from the start of the show has been they're a team. They're the sum of their parts. There's other people that, you know, you may want on your team. There's other people that may have more talent on the team. But this team seems to play well because everybody seems to know what their role is. And that's what has made this team so successful. Okay, that's what it's been. It's been next man up mentality. It's been, you know, understanding what you do defensively. It's been everything. So they did not play their best in game one. Philly did not play their best in game one. So the question becomes, who makes the better adjustments and who is more successful in implementing those adjustments for game two. That's who will win tomorrow night at the Garden. When we return, we'll turn our attention to baseball. We'll talk about the Yankees. And I'm going to start with a tribute to an old friend and a guy that I really respect. That's next on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Larry Hardesty Show on 98.7 ESPN.
And the pitch hit in the air to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a grand slam. Non dimenticare. That ball sure traveled far. Giancarlo, he hits a grand slam deep in the left field seats. And the Yankees take a 5-1 lead.
I just happened to do something for Bernie Williams. He hit a home run, and I said, burn, baby, burn. And it kind of mushroomed from there. But it never was intended for every player because, frankly, I'm not smart enough to do something for every player. But I did the best I could. And it's amazing what started out as became so big. I'm very, very fortunate, that's all.
What was your favorite of all those individual flourishes?
Well, I don't know. That stuff. I did say A-bomb from A-Rod when he hit a home run. And I did say Robbie Cano, don't you know? And I think those are pretty good.
John Sterling. I have to laugh. It's the Larry Hardesty Show here on 98.7 ESPN. You know, I met John a number of years ago. And, I mean, I've been following him forever. And I feel bad doing this to John because I feel uncomfortable when people do it to me. I grew up listening to John Sterling. Well, I did. I grew up listening to John Sterling when he had his talk show on. And by the way, the call for John, courtesy of WFAN, and when he was on WMCA years and years and years ago, he had a talk show. And he was as gregarious and covered all the sports as you heard him, you know, during the Yankee games. And his longevity was amazing. I listened to him call the Nets games when they were the New York Nets and played at Nassau Coliseum with Dr. J and the late, great Tim Bassett and so many other of those fabulous players. And so when I started covering the Nets for ESPN, and I'd see him when I go to the Yankees, he would say, "Hello, Lawrence, how are those Nets doing?" in his radio voice. And we would chat, you know, about the Nets for a couple of minutes and everything. So he's great at what he did. He is the master of, you know, not giving himself the credit that he deserves. He was smart. And he was smart to come up and creative to come up with different ones for everybody. And it's a niche. And to be able, and I've been blessed. I mean, I've got over 40 years in this business. And for him to still be broadcasting, he's 85. And he's done Islander hockey. We talked about the Nets games he did. He did Atlanta Hawks. He filled in between the Hawks. He filled in and did some Knick games for Marv back in the day. He's just, obviously with the Yankees, he's had a tremendous career. And I'm sorry to see him leave. I enjoy the creativity. You know, the what's he going to come up with next? To what is that home run call going to be? It was just it's the end of an era. And you know, hopefully he'll continue have a long life and continue to have some time now to you know, to just do what he wants to do. But just think of it: you call over 5,200 games. And he called 5,000 in a row consecutively. And he calls every inning. An amazing man. An amazing man. Franz in Massapequa. Hey, Franz.
Yo, Larry. What's up, my man?
How you doing, partner?
Rolling solo today. I like it. I like it a lot, man. You're the best.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Yeah, listen, you do a great job. But I like you with, you know, I like you either way. But I'm a Mets fan, diehard Mets fan. It's scary. I'm a hardcore Mets fan. I get on them, and if they get rid of Alonso, I'm still going to stick by it. I'm gone. But anyway, talking about announcers, Mm-hmm. Just like with you guys on the radio. You guys got that, you know, when you turn it on for the first time and hear Larry on there, it, you know, that voice is going to grab him or it's not. It's very simple. There's no in-between. You have one of those voices, Larry. You know what I mean? John Sterling's got one. And I'm a Mets fan, man. We had some great announcers, and we still do. Mm-hmm. But this calls for those Yankee fans that got on John Sterling all the time. John Sterling this and John Sterling that. I turned on a Yankee game the other day without him, you know, with somebody. The new guy, nothing against the new guy. I don't know him. But mm-hmm. I'm a Mets fan. I couldn't even listen to it for 10 seconds. They're going to miss him like there's no tomorrow, and I love it because I can't stand the Yankee fans because they're spoiled rotten. You know what I'm saying, Larry?
I hear you, Fred.
Just a quick, let me end it. Just can you give me a percentage of the chance that you think that the Mets might get Soto if the Yankees can't sew him up? Love you, brother. Have a wonderful day.
All right. Thanks, Fran. Listen, if it's purely money, I give them a great opportunity because you've got a guy as an owner who, you know, could write a blank check. I mean, he was right there on the Yamamoto deal. And the way Yamamoto pitched on Friday, I think he saved his money. It's only one outing. But, and you've got a guy who's willing to spend money. So I think it's a pretty good percentage if the Yankees, you know, can't sign him. But what the Yankees gave up, the Yankees did not trade for him to not sign him. They're going to do what they need to do to keep him. They definitely are. But, Fran, I'll ask the same question to Pat Ragazzo, who will join us from L.A. at the bottom of the hour here on 98.7 ESPN. What would have been perfect theater yesterday at the stadium would have been for the Yankees to send John Sterling home with a nice win. But it was tough. They ended up losing in extra innings by the score of 2-0. Aaron Judge struck out 4 times and after then heard some boos. Here was the exchange with Aaron Judge in the media after the game.
Does that bother you when Yankee fans vent a little bit at you?
I've heard worse, and I'd probably be doing the same thing in their situation.
Aaron Boone, are you worried about Judge's struggles to start the season?
It's a hard game, man. We can go back in history of time and talk about great players go through a little funk. Not worried at all. Aaron Judge, he'll be fine.
Now, look, I understand why Yankee fans would be concerned. Okay, I get it. It's Aaron Judge. You got off to the great start without him. Juan Soto's been tremendous. You know, you've had some, you know, some offense from other guys who you didn't expect. Okay? So I get that you're waiting for Judge to get there. Even on the outside, looking at this, Aaron Judge is going to contribute to this offense. I mean, Aaron Judge is just going through a little bit right now where I think he's reaching. He's stretching the zone a little bit. He's going after pitches that are not his pitch. He'll be okay. Your job offensively is to keep finding the offense. The other people have to step up because you know he can carry this team. Aaron Judge is going to be fine. He is the least of the Yankee worries. I mean, you know, listen, Nestor Cortez was very good yesterday. Rodon has been better than expected. So these are the things that, you know, the pitching I would be more concerned about than Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge will be fine. Hurts yesterday, I get it. 4 strikeouts, I understand. And here's the one thing I know about fans. He goes 4-for-4 today with a couple of home runs. All is forgiven. All will be forgiven. But I think it's a little early. It's April 21st. Judge will be okay. When we return, Pat Ragazzo will join us from L.A. We'll talk about the Mets' hot start and what's going on with Francisco Alvarez. When will he be back? But first, this is easily, I mean, it's not even a question. This is easily the most anticipated sporting event of the year. What do you mean? What? No, I'm not talking Knicks Sixers. No, I'm not talking Rangers Caps. I'm talking the pickleball showdown between Team DiPietro and Rothenberg and Team Anita Marks and Amani Toomer. What do you mean you don't know about this? Come on, wake up. It takes place Sunday, May 5th at Pickleball America in Stamford, Connecticut. Pre-game coverage kicks off on ESPN New York at 9 a.m. with a live broadcast hosted by Anita Marks as she sets the stage for the pickleball showdown. Then, shortly after the show, the paddles come out for the Pickleball Showdown for the Ages. Be there when? On March 5th to witness this showcase event at Pickleball America in Stamford, Connecticut. Tell them Larry Hardesty sent you. From 98.7 ESPN.
That racket, I'm going to stick it where the sun don't shine.
This is the Larry Hardesty Show on 98.7 ESPN.
So it's a torn ligament. He will require surgery. So this is something that hopefully we get it done at the beginning of next week. We don't know, you know, the timetable for his recovery, but we're pretty confident that we'll get him back this year. So,
Carlos Mendoza, manager of the Mets, on the injury to Francisco Alvarez, the Mets' second-year catcher who's been just a phenomenal player. It's the Larry Hardesty Show here on 98.7 ESPN. To find out what's going on, the latest with Francisco Alvarez, and see what's going on with the Mets and how are they so hot of late, we head out to L.A. Just now, listen carefully, everybody. He's just outside the Dodger clubhouse. So if he has to disappear for a second, it's probably because he's doing his work that he does a great job for Sports Illustrated, covering the Mets and Yankees. He's Pat Ragazzo. Pat, thanks for a couple of minutes, my friend. How are you?
I'm great, Larry. How are you? Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. Pat, let's lock it down. Any updates on what's going on with Francisco Alvarez? And this happened on Friday, correct?
Yes, on Friday, Francisco Alvarez was rounding first base. He slipped and fell. He caught himself and his thumb bent in a way that should not bend. And the Mets took him out after he stayed on the base paths. And he underwent an MRI, and it revealed a torn ligament in his UCL of his thumb. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. Now, this is a really tough blow for the Mets, given the way Alvarez has been playing on both sides of the diamond. But at the same time, the fact that he could be back in June is really a win for the Mets and for Alvarez.
Oh, man. Dodgers caught him. We'll try to catch up with Pat Ragazzo and get reconnected in a second here on 98.7 ESPN. You know, he's absolutely right about the loss to Alvarez, loss of Alvarez, because, you know, we heard all this stuff about, you know, he wasn't that great a defender. The offense was there, but we weren't sure about the defense. And we welcome Pat Ragazzo back. And Pat, I was just saying to the audience, you know, we heard all this about Francisco Alvarez. He was offense. He needed work behind the plate. But I submit to you, he's been better behind the plate than we thought. And his work with this pitching staff, especially because of injury, I think has been one of the reasons why they've been so successful so far.
Yes, it is a reason for their success. Alvarez has been dedicated to his craft since he came up to the big leagues. And it really showed, especially last year and in the early part of this year, that the Mets are leading the NL in staff ERA. Francisco Alvarez, it's a really huge loss. More so probably a loss on defense because, you know, he wasn't really fully gotten going at the plate, and they're about to get J.D. Martinez back after this West Coast trip. So they should be all right offensively until he returns. But, yeah, I think defensively it's going to be a major hit to the pitching staff, and we'll see how it plays out in the next couple months.
Give me your scouting report on Alvarez. He's obviously a major league catcher. Obviously he's good, but he's a backup for a reason. Can he keep this pitching staff, afloat until Alvarez gets back?
That's the million-dollar question. Narvaez is a catcher who can provide a little bit of offense, but his defensive skills need to improve behind the plate. And luckily, the Mets called up Thomas Nito, who knows this staff well. He's very good defensively, one of the best framers in all of baseball, and he has a good arm behind the plate. The Mets haven't thrown out a runner this year. So the impact of Thomas Nito is going to help with controlling the base pass there. So Narvaez is going to need to pick it up, and we'll see these two split time and probably see Nito. If he hits more, he'll probably be in the lineup more so than Narvaez moving forward.
Pat, this was a team that was 0-5 and was struggling. Now they have won 6 in a row, 8 out of 10, and they are, dare I say, 2.5 games behind Atlanta. What's been the change?
Really, the change has been the offense has picked it up. Now, the pitching did well in the 0-5 start, and they were doing their job, and now the offense has picked it up. You've seen guys like Harrison Bader step up, and Francisco Lindor starting to turn it around at the plate, and Pete Alonso, Jeff McNeil, Starling Marte is back to normal. Brandon Nimmo, like the Mets have a very deep lineup, and now they're probably going to get Brett Beatty back, who's been hitting well in the early part of the season. So this Mets team is deep, and when J.D. Martinez comes back, watch out. They're only going to get better.
What have you seen from Starling Marte? I mean, this is more than I expected from him this early, especially after the past 2 years where he's really struggled because of injury.
His speed, power, and explosiveness are back now that he's healthy. He had the double groin surgery and it really hindered him last year, and it showed. And now he's back, he's healthy, and he's back to the all-star caliber player that he was and the big impact piece in the lineup that he was in 2022. It's been huge for the Mets so far.
Pat Ragazzo is my guest. He's live in L.A. outside the Dodger Clubhouse as the Mets and Dodgers get ready to play once again. Mets looking for the sweep in this series. Pat, what was your impressions of Yamamoto when you saw him on Friday night?
I mean, Yamamoto has gotten off to a slow start in the big leagues. There's no question. And the Mets were all over him on Friday night. And I think he'll turn it around, but at the same time, it's an adjustment period. And he hasn't really impressed me so far.
This Dodger team, 12-11. I mean, come on, Pat, it's early, but they've lost 7 of 10. I know it's just a 2-game sample size that you've seen, but from your reporting, what's going on with this Dodger team?
I think with the Dodgers, it's pitching. It really comes down to pitching. I mean, Yamamoto hasn't gotten it going yet. Tyler Glasnow doesn't look like himself. Bobby Miller's really been the only Dodger pitcher who's impressed so far. And then they have Gavin Stone. Like, they really have some pitching problems. We know the offense isn't a problem. They're stacked from top to bottom. But pitching is really going to be the question with this Dodger team. And right now, the Mets look like the best team in the National League. I mean, they just beat the Braves 2-3, and they're going for a sweep today against the Dodgers. Like, those are the two best teams coming into the season in the NL. And now it looks like the Mets might be the best team in the NL.
Last thing, because I know you're up against it and waiting to go for interviews and stuff to do your job for SI. Give me your early read on Carlos Mendoza. I mean, you know, we always talk about what you really can find out something about a new manager or a new player when you go through struggles. I mean, to start your season 0-5, that's a struggle. What have you learned? What has Carlos Mendoza impressed you with so far?
He's been an even keel guy, and he's learned from Aaron Boone, who's more of a fiery guy and likes to get ejected, as we know. And Mendoza's been really a breath of fresh air and just what the Mets have needed. And he's shown a lot of good leadership qualities, and the players love him. So he's done a really good job so far in these first couple of weeks, and we'll see how his rookie season continues to go.
Pat, thanks for a couple of minutes. Know you're up against your deadlines, and we'll talk to you when you get back.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, Larry. Take care.
All right, take care. That's Pat Ragazzo. Does a great job for SI.com. covering the Mets and Yankees. And, you know, we normally chat with him a little longer, but he's outside the Dodger Club. I was waiting for that availability, which will be happening in a couple of minutes because, you know, the first pitch is about 4:10 New York time. And this is going to be an interesting – this is really, for me, this is shocking. I did not expect this Met team to look the way they look. Now, once again, I wasn't overly panicking at 0-5. Okay, I'm not panicking the 0-5 because it's the start of the season. 150-plus games left at that point. But it did make you wonder, you know, what is this season going to be like? And while we know there are ebbs and flows to every season, okay, every season, it was really curious to see how they were going to respond, especially with the new manager. And Lindor wasn't hitting, and you know, you're waiting to see how is Marte going to respond? What's going to happen? You know, Beatty, can he really play third? Is he the everyday third baseman? Nimmo in left. You know, is that going to be okay? So there was just something, and you know, no Senga. You know, is your start, is your ace? What's going to happen? And you know, the amazing thing was that you were getting, you know, the pitching was okay, but you weren't hitting. And really, my thought process was, okay, I needed the Mets to hit until Senga got back, and you could kind of put your starting pitching staff in order, right? Well, the funny thing happened. It's like the pitching has held the opposing offenses until the Met offense has gotten going, and that's kind of crazy. But to look at the schedule, to look in the standings, and you know, Atlanta's been a house of horrors for the Mets. I mean, we're not just talking about the struggles they had in the 101-win season when they just killed themselves at the end of the year. But to look at them taking 2 of 3 from Atlanta and then now seeing them a half game behind the Phillies, whom many believe, and I believe, comparable to the Mets, and Atlanta, who I know is better than the Mets. But once again, they had injuries to their pitching. And ladies and gentlemen, pitching is the great equalizer. Right? It's the great equalizer. Injuries with pitching, that's what makes the difference. And now this is a Met team, 6-1, 6 in a row, 8 out of 10, and just 2 games out of the top spot in the NL East. That's amazing. When we return, We'll turn our attention quickly to the NFL draft that is coming up later this week. And at the top of the hour, we'll head to Madison Square Garden. That's where Don LaGreca will join us, who'll give us a scene setter, a preview of Rangers Caps. That's here on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Larry Hardesty Show on 98.7 ESPN.
My job is to do what's best for the franchise. So if there's an opportunity to go up, move back, stay, whether it's in the first round, third round, fifth round, that's what we'll do. But you take all that into account when you're making those type of decisions. And, you know, again, that's some of the planning and strategy and some of those meetings that we'll have over the next couple of days and the what ifs, if this, then, and you go back and forth on it. And the good thing is you have the first round on Thursday. You can, you know, regroup, you know, going into Friday before the second and third round and have those conversations again. So, you know, the draft being over a three-day period helps you in terms of when you have those meetings and those strategy sessions, when you decide if you're going to go up, down, you know, which players you like. So those are all things that we'll talk about over the next week or so.
No, those are the questions we're asking ourselves. Okay, who are those guys? Would you trade up? Who are those guys? How comfortable are you moving up to get those players? So those are all the discussions that we're having right now. We're going to have more strategy meetings next week on, okay, who are those players that we would consider coming up from 10 to go get? How many of them are they? How far are you willing to go? Obviously, we don't have our full complement. We don't have a second-round pick this year, so that limits you a little bit on how far you can go up. But those are the conversations we're having. And then on the flip side, we get to 10, and we have a strong group of players that we love. How willing are you to move back? How far do you feel comfortable moving back? So those are all the conversations that we're having yesterday and all next week.
A tale of two GMs on the Larry Hardesty Show here on 98.7 ESPN. First, Joe Shane, then of the Giants, then Joe Douglas of the Jets. General managers trying to figure out what goes into that decision to trade up or down. Now, the Giants, in my opinion, have more of a decision possibly than the Jets. And as Joe Douglas mentioned, because they don't have a second-round pick, yeah, you know, what do you do? The Giants, a lot of conversation about quarterback play. A lot of conversation on whether they would move up to get a quarterback or would a quarterback fall in their laps. And what type of quarterback would that be? Would it be Penix Jr. From Washington? J.J. McCarthy, I don't think it's going to be there. I think Minnesota's going to play, let's make a deal with somebody, try to move up and get him. Probably move up ahead of the Giants. So in a realistic world, honestly, the Giants really could be and should be looking at trading down, getting some more draft picks, and having the opportunity to really rebuild that team. They're in more of a rebuilding mode, and I get it's the NFL, and you can go from worst to first in a year, and they've made some adjustments. They've made some additions. Did a nice job on the first couple of days of free agency to strengthen their team, especially defensively. But offensively, they still need help. Don't know what's going on with Darren Waller. Still need to find out who's going to be a number one receiver. Darius Slayton, you know, contract situations. So, and, you know, the question around Daniel Jones. Is he your quarterback? Is he a franchise quarterback? Could he be the guy that will take you to where you need to go? Injury concerns, you know, if you're a Giant fan, you worry about it. It's a guy that's not been available very often. So just a lot of things going on with the situation for the New York Giants and Jets in the draft. You know, you see the Jets rumored to possibly be taking a tight end at number 10. There was, a conversation Gordon Damer and I had on ESPN New York Tonight last week about a trade proposal that was out there where the Jets would move up, play let's make a deal with the Chargers and try to get, was it the Chargers or somebody else? I can't remember. And try to get a deal for Marvin Harrison Jr. and, you know, line him up alongside Garrett Wilson put a smile on Aaron Rodgers' face. But then what do you do about your offensive line and the depth there, especially when you're coming off a season where you had 13 different offensive linemen starting lineups because of the fact that you had injury? A lot of work for these GMs over the next couple of days. And the work doesn't end on draft day either. It doesn't. 1-800-919-3776. Dave's in the car. What's up, Dave?
Hey, what's up? Obviously, thanks for having me on the show. I'm going to play devil's advocate with the Giants coach for a minute, so just bear with me.
Okay.
I think he's getting cut a little bit too much slack, a little bit too much rope to hang himself with, and here's why. when you look at the Giants' first season, they squeaked by a lot of games. They had a very soft schedule. The second year was a debacle. You had a lot of people within the locker room, especially one coach who's well-tenured and well-respected in the NFL, basically just walk away from his money because that's how disgusted he was. Now, you hear sportscasters saying he can reset the clock and buy himself some time by getting a new quarterback. Okay, that's fine. They always, when I look at his resume, he has a lot of great things in his resume, but all you hear is about what he did with Josh Allen, what he did with Josh Allen. He didn't create Josh Allen in a laboratory. Right now, as we speak, I'm sure Josh Allen is crushing his body in the gym and working out to become a better quarterback. So that my position with Gabo is this. I think he's got 2 years left, and on those 2 years, he should at least win 7 to 9 games, if not make the playoffs, and there should be no more ruckus coming out of that Giants locker room. I think saying he's going to get 3 or 4 more years, you got to help rebuild the team, and they keep throwing up Josh Allen. It's like, okay, so what else have you done for me lately? Josh Allen is already a made man. Am I wrong for having that position with him? Because Lovie Smith was 10-6 with the Bears, and they fired him.
No, you're not wrong, Dave. Thanks for the phone call. And I don't think he has 2 years. See, when you're looking at people talking about working with quarterbacks, that's a Joe Shane thing. Because as he mentioned, his job is to not only look at this year, his job is to look forward. Where can he put this team in a really good position? That's Joe Shane's job. All right? That's his job. That's what he does. Okay? So for Brian Daboll's got to turn things around this year. He does. I mean, even your most ardent Giant fan was wondering, okay, is he really the right coach? Now, to be fair to him, who was your big-time receiver? Where was your offense coming from? Your offense really came from who? Your offense came from, you know, Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. Well, Saquon Barkley is not here anymore. Saquon Barkley has taken his talents to the city of brotherly love. Barkley is in Philly. So who is going to be the person that now takes over this team, takes this team to the next level offensively? They had issues with the offensive line last year? Absolutely. We know that. They had issues with receiver? Yes, we know that. They had issues at quarterback with, you know, the problems that they had with receivers, with the quarterbacks, with all the injuries they had. So it was a tough year for Brian Daboll, no question about it. The situation with Wink Martindale has been well documented. Now, I don't know, but what kind of, I don't know, I guess it depends on how you look at things, but for me, the fact that Martindale didn't go anywhere else, it kind of makes me look at things a little bit differently. I might be more amenable to giving Daboll a little slack to say that he was just frustrated over the fact that it was a disappointing season after you surprised a bunch of people. See, Dave, what really hurt the Giants was last year was supposed to be the first year, and the first year was supposed to be last year, right? You were supposed to have a major change in your second year as opposed to getting out how good you were the first year, making the playoffs. Yeah, you had a soft schedule, but you still made the playoffs and beat a Minnesota Viking team. I get it. Everybody downplayed Minnesota that year and how they were and what they weren't and everything like that. But you still went on the road and beat them, okay? You still beat them. So for you to be surprised, folks, have a playoff record and go win a playoff game before you get routed by Philly, who gets to the Super Bowl before they lose to Kansas City, the next year you're expected to pick up on that. And it was awful. So I don't know that Brian Daboll has 2 years. I don't think he does. I think next year is a very important year for him. But also for Joe Shane, this is a very important draft. Okay? This is a draft where he's got to figure out what are they doing at quarterback. Is he going to take a quarterback in the first round? Does he wait and take a quarterback later as a project? I mean, I don't know. For me, I think if you have to move up, if you have to do something to get one of these quarterbacks, okay, then you do. If you feel that maybe next year's quarterback class is going to be better, it's going to be more depth, this quarterback class is kind of short, then you know what? Then you don't get a quarterback. You draft best player available, or you move down and get a bunch of picks and improve yourself in multiple positions, which you ultimately will have to do. It's real clear to me. It's one of those two. I just don't know how much in love they are with the quarterback class, considering where they are drafting. Okay? I just don't know. I don't know. That's something that we can only guess at to see how they feel. And maybe the Giants are willing to look towards next year. I mean, listen, Daniel Jones is on the books for this year anyway. Next year is like a wash year. I would think that they would invoke the injury protection that they have in the contract. So at some point in time, you will see him sit if he's not injured before then, and hopefully he won't be. Hopefully he'll turn things around and have a great year and confuse the Giant front office even more. Well, maybe we will keep him. Wow, look at that. Wow, look at what he's done. Especially if they get some weapons that he can throw to. You know, I mean, listen, I'm not saying that Daniel Jones is an unbelievable Hall of Fame future quarterback. But can we be fair? He hasn't had a great offensive line. He hasn't had a bunch of offensive weapons. We're really kind of judging him on the fact that he can't stay healthy, and things that he can control, he's not done a really good job at it. But considering that he's only been able to have Saquon Barkley as his number one offensive weapon for the time that he's been here, I mean, you really should mark him as an incomplete. Unfortunately, because of the salary situation in the National Football League and contracts, you can't mark him incomplete. You have to make a decision. So that's what they have to do. And it'll be interesting to see what they do in the draft. It'll tell us a lot. My gut feeling is that they stay where they are and they take a receiver in that spot. It's the Larry Hardesty Show on 98.7 ESPN.